And welcome everybody officially to tonight's call. We have guest speaker Steve Yoder, who's a writer and author who has been a freelance reporter for about a dozen years now, or maybe a little more, in a lot of different outlets. And he's particularly working on a book right now about the impacts of sex offender registries and such on family members. And he's going to be talking with us today about how to do op-eds, letters to the editor. And this is especially useful, I think, because this is something that just about any of us can do. If you can write at all, you can certainly try to write op-eds, letters to the editor, and others that can get read and shared. So I know I'm really looking forward to it. And without further ado, I'm going to mute myself and let Steve get started and turn on the meeting wall. So,
great. Steve. Thanks for all of that, Brenda. And I'm assuming you can hear me. And I guess if you can hear me, then everybody else can help.
Yep, I can. Okay. I can hear you fine.
You can. Okay, great. Great. Well, I wish I could see all of you. The session that we did, that at the RSOL conference last summer, we had folks sitting in a kind of a circle, and it was great to be able to interact with folks. It was a little different, but I hope we can make it work. So I know that, Brenda, I'm not sure if you're hearing an echo of me, but anyway, I'll keep going, I guess. I know that some of you have been advocating on this issue for a lot of years. Brenda, I'm going to stop. Okay, now I hear that echo go away, so maybe that's fixed. I know that a lot of you folks are advocates. Some of you might actually have written op-eds yourselves. Many of you may have written letters to the editor. Probably more of you have written letters to the editor already. So, I try to, as Brenda said, we're going to stop for questions at several points, because I'd like this to be as interactive as we can make it. We got it at the session last July. I felt like it was a really good interactive session. Folks shared a lot of good ideas. I'm going to try to make my own technology work with this PowerPoint. Aha, it does work. I'm very happy. What we're going to do is, we're going to talk about how to write and structure op-eds. We're going to talk about how to pitch op-eds to editors and where to pitch them. And then we're going to talk about writing letters to the editor. But actually, before I launch into all of that, I wanted to talk briefly about the kind of why of op-eds and letters to the editor. My disclaimer is, the other thing that's different about this session is that last year I had no PowerPoint, because, I don't know, maybe you heard this, but my attitude toward PowerPoint is that power corrupts, but PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. So we'll see how, I hope this goes well. And one other thing I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if I'm still echoing, Brenda. Sounds like I am. Okay, well, maybe I'll go ahead here and we can see if that echo goes away. But what I wanted to say is that there is a handout of, so that you don't feel like you have to take notes during this session, there is a handout posted on the wall that has the entirety of this presentation, so that after this is over, if you want to download that, that has the content of what we're talking about here. I'm just going to break there, Brenda, see if you wanted me to stop for a minute. Take care of that echo, or should I keep going?
There we go. All right, am I back on?
You are, yeah.
Yeah, but this radio, guys, I'm really sorry, but Steve and I at least can't hear each other because the echo is so bad. So,
Brenda, I have a question for you. Whether if I dialed in on a regular phone line, would that make a difference? I am on a headset. Is that maybe the problem?
Yeah, I'm going to turn my headset off as well and see if that helps. So we'll pause a moment here. Okay, I'm going to be echoing again probably when I talk. Just letting everybody know that Steve is trying to call in.
Oh, sorry, Brenda. I'm still on, Brenda. I didn't know you wanted to. I'm going to call in. I'm going to call in on the other
line.
Yeah,
okay. I'm going to do the same thing. So
very good.
Pause.
Brenda, I don't know if you can hear me, but
Yeah. Okay. Can anybody hear me?
Yeah. It's Steve. I can hear.
I've just turned off the radio because otherwise we're not going to have any kind of a presentation at all.
I'm getting a lot of feedback, a lot of echoing.
You've got everybody live right now, and people need to be muted again.
Brenda, you need to remute everybody.
Yeah, I know I do. Is Steve still? Is Steve back?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me, Brenda?
Yeah, and I'm going to put everybody back on Q&A. Okay. I just have to turn off the radio, and I'm going to have to talk with tech support later. I couldn't find any way to, but I did want just people to know that we weren't gone entirely. So do I have you, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to restart the recording. Okay. So we're now going to start Steve's presentation over again, and I apologize to those of you who are on here. I tried really hard to get the radio to work, but it's just not working. So, okay. So, Steve, yeah. I'll skip the introduction, though, in the interest of time. Please go ahead and start again from the beginning, and we'll go a little long.
From the top here, and I feel for you, Brenda, dealing with technology.
You'll need to, if you've got a volume control, we'll need to turn you up a little, I think.
Okay, great. I'll turn myself up here. Okay, so, I come at this as a freelance journalist for a dozen years or so, and what I said earlier, which you may have heard some of you, is that, I know that we have a group of many of you are activists on this issue, and some of you probably have experience with this topic already, having written op-eds yourselves, and many more of you maybe letters to the editor. So, we're going to try to make this interactive. So, as Brenda said, we're going to stop for questions in a few places, and the other thing I said, at the session last summer at RSOL, folks did have a lot of great ideas, so. Do want to hear from you. So, flipping to the next screen here. So we're going to talk about writing op-eds. We're going to talk about how to pitch op-eds to editors, kind of where to pitch them, and then we're going to talk about writing letters to the editor. But before I get to that, I'm going to talk briefly about the why of all of this, why we write op-eds and letters, and wanted to also mention, in case you didn't hear it, the handout that contains all the content here is actually on the wall. So you want to download that now or after this is over.
Yeah. Steve, can you get any closer to your mic?
Okay.
For some reason,
let me try not having my headset on. Let me try talking directly into the phone. All right, hold on.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Is that any better? Brenda?
Speak up a little more and then we'll find out.
Okay. All right. That's my loudest tone I can kind of go.
Okay. It's funny. You're quieter now than you were when we started, but so just be sure to speak up because some folks are saying they can't hear you very well.
Okay. I will do my best.
Okay.
So let's talk first about why we care about doing this. Why do op-eds and letters make a difference? And I'm just going to share some of the ideas that that I came up with, but also some that folks suggested during the presentation last year. The first is that obviously we don't want to let the news media control the message. Writing op-eds ensures equal airtime for our side of the debate. We're trying to dispel myths. We're trying to share facts. And, you all know what a lot of those myths are, like, the idea that all of those on the registry are, are pedophiles, myths like there's a high reoffense rate for those on the registry, those convicted of sex crimes. We know that's not true. So that's the first. Another one is We want to attach, you know, a face to policies. We want to get across the idea that these aren't just policies, that they have consequences for people in your community, and you're the folks who can tell people that. People listen to personal stories. I'm just going to stop there. Brenda, am I coming through okay?
I'm not getting any more complaints at this point.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. You know, another reason is to bring more attention to your state or local ARSL group. You know, that could mean recruiting more supporters. It could mean getting donations. So that obviously makes a difference. Another reason, to open up new media opportunities. You know, if you write an op-ed or a letter, the next time, you know, that a residence restriction is proposed, or, you know, a reporter is looking for somebody to comment on another policy-related issue related to the registry, they may call you. Reporters, you know, the first place we go when we're looking for people to talk to is people who've written on the topic. So that gets your name out there to reporters. And then finally, you know, doing this empowers the silent majority. There's often a silent majority out there kind of waiting for somebody to say what they've been thinking. So when you come out and talk about the insanity of having somebody who's, you know, who was convicted as a 16-year-old and they're still in the registry 30 years later, there are a bunch of people out there who have had nagging doubts about registry laws but just have not heard that point of view articulated. So, and actually, I don't know if any of you saw Derek Lowe, I guess it is, his op-ed in the Sacramento Bee. It's been in the last couple of weeks, but it was really good, you know, using statistics and providing a point of view that that a lot of folks have not heard related to a news story that had recently run in the Bee. So, all right, so let's just get right into it here. Op-eds. Normally when we think about people who write op-eds, we think about people who are experts on a topic. We think about lawyers, researchers, book authors, and so forth. You know, and that's true. That's the folks who get invited to write op-eds are experts. And I, you know, most of you may not think of yourselves this way, but those of you in this group are, in fact, experts, I'd contend, because, you know, you're experts on how sex offender laws affect individuals and families. And I suspect you're also able to talk about why our current registry and residency laws actually don't work beyond just how they affect you, the policy implications of them. So, and I'm going to try to flip here, and that worked. So I'm very happy about that. So with op-eds, we're going to talk about the structure of them. We're going to talk first about the lead. We're going to talk about the theme, then supporting arguments, and then conclusions. And I, you know, it just occurred to me that some of you may not be seeing what's on screen. So, you know, I'm gonna read everything that's up here so that, you know, that's on screen so you can at least hear it. So I'll try to go slowly enough so that I know it's easier if you have it in front of you. But so let's talk about the lead. You know, when and if you're, you know, reading the paper, what makes you want to keep reading an article after the headline is a great first sentence or two. That's your lead. I mean, that's what in journalism, you know, we call the lead. And that might be the most important part of your piece, because what you're trying to do is hook your reader. You're trying to, you know, grab their attention right off the bat. That'll make them keep reading. So there are a number of ways to do that, and some of the examples I'm going to give are adapted from actual editorials or lifted from actual editorials. So let me go to the examples here. So first, you know, one way to go is a dramatic story. So this one is, so quote, this is from an actual editorial, quote, "The morning that Donald Smith murdered Cherish Periwinkle, he went to the police to verify that his correct address was listed on Florida's public sex offender registry," unquote. That's dramatic because obviously it shows that the registry didn't prevent what happened there. That was the point of the author here. So that's dramatic story. There's another way to go is the news hook. So here's an example of a news hook. So here's a quote. Quote, "The recent arrest of John Burbine a level one registered sex offender charged with molesting 13 babies and toddlers, has understandably ignited the emotions of Massachusetts residents. If these heinous and depraved charges are proven in court, then the full weight of the law should be brought down on this individual. So there, what the author's doing is linking back to something that was just in the news. People are thinking about it. It's shocked everybody. So, you know, people are going to pay attention to that op-ed. All right, let's move to another one. That's the news hub. So personal story is another way to go. So here's an example of a personal story lead. So, quote, I'm on the sex offender registry. I know well the tremendous power of those words. In 2007, I pled guilty to possession of child pornography, unquote. So that tells you right up front who the author is and how they're connected to this and makes you pay attention. So another way to go, another direction to go, is to take a conventional belief and turn it on end. So here's an example of that, again, from an editorial, an actual editorial. Quote, sex offender locator apps proudly boast that they can help users find sex offenders in their local area. In reality, they aren't detecting anything, unquote. So everybody has the idea that these apps will help you protect your family, and this author is saying that's a myth. And and then finally, another possibility is to use an anniversary. So here is an example of an author who did that in their op-ed, in their lead. So, quote, 11 years ago today, the Supreme Court ruled that sex offender notification laws can be applied retroactively because they don't punish offenders. But the everyday experiences of offenders and their families prove that the reasoning in that decision was wrong, unquote. So that's an anniversary that's written right around the time that Supreme Court passed ruled in 2003, I believe it was, on that on the issue of retroactivity. All right, so that's lead, and we're going to move on to theme, and then after I talk about theme, we're going to stop for some questions or any comments or ideas you all have. So here we go with theme. So what's the theme? The theme of your piece is a one-sentence statement of your key point. And this is usually in the first paragraph. It's definitely in, if it's not in the first paragraph, it's definitely in the second. And it, you know, it orients the reader to what you're trying to say. And so they want to know that right up front. So this, you know, when you are first sitting down to write and you decide to do an op-ed, this is actually the first thing you should do, because it answers the question, what's the point I'm trying to prove here? So when you are sitting down to write, don't start actually with your lead, because that actually, for writers everywhere, that is the hardest thing to do. You write your theme first, because that's what the piece is about, and that will guide the rest of your piece. That will guide the rest of the writing. So write that down first. And I'm going to digress a moment into grammar, and this is the only grammar we're going to do in this whole presentation, I promise. But the best themes have an action verb in them. And so to explain what an action verb is, I mean, many of you probably know this, but just in case you don't, here's a couple sentences. So Jack hit the ball is an active, it's an active sentence. Hit is the action verb, subject, verb, object. There's someone or something doing the action, that's Jack. We have a verb, that's the action, which is hit in this case, Jack hit. And then we have an object that receives the action, and in this case, that's the ball. So Jack hit the ball is an active sentence. Whereas the sentence, Jack is a nice guy, is not an active sentence. Because here we have something or someone, like in the previous sentence, but we don't actually have an action, or we don't have an object of the action. So notice the second sentence, again, Jack is a nice guy. It's more like Jack is a nice guy. Jack equal. It's like there's an equal sign there. Is this kind of a linking verb? It's not an action verb. So anyway, I say all that just to say that in our themes, what we want is the first sentence, not the second. We want action oriented sentences. So, All right. And let's talk about some examples of good themes with action verbs. So here come some examples for you. So here's one. Quote, the public sex offender registry hides the real issues in preventing sex crimes against children, unquote. One sentence, real tight, tells you right away what that's about. Here's another one. Quote, we should punish those who commit repeat sex crimes, not the entire group of people on the sex offender registry, unquote. So that's the point of this person's piece. They were arguing that we need to narrow the folks we focus on. And then third, here's the quote. And another example, quote, punishment that doesn't consider how to reintegrate offenders hurts all of us, unquote. So that's the point of that piece is obviously that these policies prevent folks from reintegrating and actually put them at more risk because we're for making it tougher for them to get jobs and all of the other things that you all know so well. So I'm going to stop there for... Brenda, or I guess yeah, now let's see, you all hit *6 and I guess you'll be able to talk as soon as Brenda turns on the ability for you to talk.
That would be correct. *6 is the button to push. I've kept myself muted in case that helps you any. You still sound kind of like you're far away. I'll just let you know that now. I'm going to hop back over and look for people who are ask and have a question to ask, or if you have a question to ask them that you would like them to answer, you're welcome to do that as well.
Right. Okay. Great.
Not sure if I see. Is anybody there? Anybody want to have a question? It's *6 is what you'd press, and I think I should be able to see you. And then that's how it's supposed to work anyway. It's always worked before.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
There. All right.
Steve, this is John Sarner from Little Rock. How you been doing?
Good.
But that's not my main question. You've given us one way to access all of the information at the startmeeting.com. Are there any other sources where we could access your presentation or access the materials that you're going to be sharing with us this evening?
In that... handout that is on the wall, there are a number of examples of the entirety of the examples I'm giving you in this PowerPoint are lifted from obviously full op-eds that have been written, and those op-eds in their entirety appear in that handout.
Okay.
And I think actually I also have links to where those came from, each of them, if I'm not mistaken. So in case you want to view the source.
Okay. I'm not sure that I don't see anybody else. I'm going to hit next just in case because I'm not sure if these are sorting that way. Let's see here. Yeah, just in case there's somebody hiding that I don't know about. I'm not sure that what you put on the wall went on our wall, Steve, so you may want to send them to me, and I'll make sure that they get up on our wall.
Okay.
In addition, since this is being recorded, we'll also have that available on our wall shortly after the meeting. I'll have that up there for people to listen again. Did anybody get on just now to say they had a question?
I did get *6. Did you get it? This is Dennis.
Yep. Well, you're here, so you must have got it.
Okay. Well, basically, I had a few questions, but unfortunately, the sound was so bad, and you just answered the biggest question, and that it is going to be recorded, or is being recorded, will be on the wall later, because I've been on the phone but watching on the monitor. So that basically suffices as far as what my question is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to put Brenda, I can try one other thing in terms of the sound, which is I can put I do have a landline phone. I don't know if that would make a difference or not, but...
Okay. I don't know. You were much louder when we first got on the call, so I don't know. I just clicked next. I'm not able to see if somebody is actually there. So if it does seem to be working, though, so just say hello if you find yourself unmuted, and then we'll know you're waiting for your question.
There is somebody here.
Yay!
There's a crackpot here.
All right. Hi, Larry.
This is Larry. I have a question. I've had a decent track record through the years of getting letters to the editor published, but I have no track record of getting op-eds published. So when you go online to the Albuquerque Journal's website and you submit something and they say keep it 300 words or less, and this is a basic question, and you have something longer and you want to do an op-ed, how do you convince them that you've got something that's op-ed material? What distinguishes the two when they go in on the electronic submission?
You mean a letter, Larry. Hi, Larry. A letter, distinguishing a letter from an op-ed?
Yes, when I'm sending a letter to the editor, they say keep it 300 words or less.
Right.
And so op-eds are usually longer. So I go online and I want to submit something to the Albuquerque Journal. They prefer everything online nowadays. So I've got a 600 piece or something, word piece. How do I distinguish that as this is an op-ed?
I think what I would do there, Larry, because you know a lot of publications have a button for submissions, and typically writers know that those buttons, you know, like they'll have a button for submit an unsolicited article or manuscript. But that's a big, that's kind of a slush pile. It goes into a stuff that, you know, doesn't get as much attention. So I think what I would do, and we can talk about this a little later too, and when we talk about pitching, but I think I'd find out the name of the editor and email it to him if you have an op-ed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess we wait a minute or something, Brenda, and then I'll move along if there's nothing.
Yep, I have at least two other people in the queue. I finally found out where they were. So I think we have Don on the call here. Are you there?
I'm here.
There you
hear
are.
Me now?
Now
yeah,
I can
sorry.
Hear you.
Okay.
There you go.
I just wanted to mention that I think you already covered this, Brenda, but I don't see the handout anywhere on the wall.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see any link for it. So.
Right. Yeah, I think it may have gone up on Steve's wall and not ours or something. I'm sure he put it up somewhere. So he can send it to me afterward, and I'll make sure that that's up there along with the recording. We'll make sure it's in the right place.
Great.
Oh, was that the it for
that,
you?
That,
okay. So we've got one other question, it looks like.
Hey there, this is Steve. If you're on the telephone listening, how can you get a copy, or is there a website you said that we could go to download the notes?
Yeah, the notes oil, Steve may have some of that up on his site, I believe you said, Steve, but if you go to the Start Meeting wall, they will be there. The recording will also be up on our website after a little while. There's a separate link of webinars up on the RSOL website. But the Start Meeting wall, you got the URL for that when you signed up for the site. It's startmeeting.com. Then the /wall/, and then the little code 168-877-435. That should be in that information that you had. But it'll be up there on that wall
where we wish we
could have watched the radio. Yeah. Okay, I have one more quick question, and then we'll let Steve move on to the next part.
This is
me. Hi, Sandy.
And I think if people, I found the wall with the notes accidentally. If you will reduce the Start Meeting page, the wall will be there with the notes on it. At least it was for me.
Oh, you saw the notes on it?
Because
I'm just seeing a couple of recordings here, but I don't see Steve's notes. But we'll make sure they're there one way or the other.
Well, yeah. They're there.
Okay. Well, very good. So at least for some of us, they're there. Okay. Well, we'll move on to back to Steve and move on.
Great. All right. So we've talked about lead. We've talked about theme. Now we're going to talk about supporting arguments. So with supporting arguments, you're at this point, you're just going to put in your points that support your theme or your central idea. So generally in an op-ed, you're not going to put in more than three supporting arguments. I mean, you've got, I'm going to talk about this later, but you've got 500 to 1,200 words. You usually are going to be sticking to two pieces of supporting evidence. You probably will want more than one. So these are the building blocks for your theme. These are what your argument rests on. So, you know, here we just have, you know, your first point, your evidence to go with that. So your points here are kind of like little mini summaries of the evidence you're about to describe in the paragraph that comes. So you have first point, the evidence. You want a conclusion in that paragraph or a couple of paragraphs, that's fine. Second point, evidence, conclusion. Third point, evidence, conclusion. So that seems fairly straightforward, but let's talk about some examples. There are different types of evidence, obviously, when we're making an argument. So let's talk about what part of the, there's some examples of types of evidence we could draw on here. So it's a lot of things. So one is statistics. Where do you get, you know, there are obviously a lot of statistics related to this issue. Where do we get statistics and information? Definitely, you know, check the websites or even call organizations and get information on the topic you're writing about. You know, there is not a single obscure topic or issue under the sun that doesn't have an organization dedicated to its advancement. So in this case, you know, you're obviously going to find a wealth of resources on the RSOL webpage. You go under the resources tab, many of you probably already know this, but there are links to a whole lot of organizations there, Women Against Registry, Stop It Now, Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, and they have, you know, each of those websites has links to other resources and great statistics. And so, and again, you know, if you're interested in a piece that used statistics very well, again, check out Derek Logue's op-ed in the Sacramento Bee. Just Google it, Derek Logue and Sacramento Bee. It did a really excellent job of using statistics. So, are people still hearing me? Brenda, you're not getting any complaints?
Okay. No, I don't think so. You seem a little louder to me, so I think we're doing a little bit better.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So another kind of evidence here is personal anecdote, and that's your own story. We've talked about that. Your story is important, and it's a, when people see how policies affect individuals, that's a really powerful way to talk about why policies do or don't work. So personal anecdote. A third kind of evidence is to cite an authority. So your state sex offender management board. Now I know a lot of these sex offender management boards are not particularly helpful or many of them are very punitive, but you know, like in California, California Sex Offender Management Board has done some things that are interesting. They have argued that the registry needs to be reduced. Colorado has reports on there. The Colorado Sex Offender Management Board has done a couple of research papers on the damage that residency restrictions do. So those are both authorities, and they're great authorities because they're the legislature's resource on this issue. So citing an authority is another way to go. And then a fourth piece of type of evidence is to draw an analogy. You know, and I don't know, thinking of one here, like, you know, the sex offender, an analogy would be like, you know, the sex offender registry is the modern day scarlet letter. And, you know, someday I believe our children are going to look back and view it with the same disbelief that we now view, or in the same way that we view branding women with the letter A for adultery as abhorrent. know, so that's an analogy. Draw a link between this issue and another. So that is evidence. So that's the evidence piece of your op-ed. Okay, we're going to go to now, we've talked about lead, we've talked about theme, we've talked about supporting arguments, and now we're going to talk about the inoculation paragraph. So this is the point, the inoculation paragraph is the point at which you're trying to inoculate yourself against obvious counterarguments. So what are we talking about when we're talking about inoculation? That word obviously literally means to vaccinate yourself against the disease. That's what you're doing here. You're thinking, okay, what are the critics on the other side going to say in response to my argument? So you're anticipating their argument. So here's an example of an inoculation paragraph. This is lifted again from an actual op-ed. So quote, here's the quote. It's easy to understand the emotional appeal of the, quote, if it just saves one child argument. But basing public policy on the rare horrific crime committed by one registered sex offender while ignoring the extensive research of the entire former sex offender population does not result in a fair and reasoned criminal justice system. So this person, this writer, is anticipating that the counterargument is, you know, the counterargument to what the author is saying is, you know, people are going to come back and say, well, so the statistics say that sex offender residency restrictions don't work, but if it prevents one child from being abused, it's worth it. And this person is saying, well, no. She takes that on directly and saying, we twist our criminal justice system when we make law in that way. All right, so that's the inoculation paragraph. So we've got, talked about lead, we've talked about theme, talked about supporting arguments, talked about the inoculation paragraph, and now we're going to talk about conclusion of the piece. And this is a little pithy ending that leaves readers with some thought that captures what you've been trying to say in the piece. Ideally, it circles back to your lead, if that's possible, connects back to what you wrote right at the beginning. So I'm going back here to, I'm going to give an example here, going back to a lead that we talked about earlier. So the lead was, quote, 11 years ago today, the Supreme Court ruled that sex offender notification laws can be applied retroactively because they don't punish offenders. But the everyday experiences of offenders and their families proved that the reasoning in that decision was wrong, unquote. So the conclusion, we could write a conclusion that circles back to that. So here's an example. I don't think the person did this, but here's the way you could end that op-ed. So, quote, Supreme Court rulings are not set in stone. It's time for national leaders to act to restore the Constitution's guarantee. So that's conclusion. And I guess right here, I'm just going to open it up briefly again, Brenda, for anything else since we last stopped. Anybody
has anything? Okay. Yeah. So again, that's star six. If anybody has a question, or if I saw at least one suggested opening sentence that was really cool that Cheryl shared. I know six adults who were victims of sex abuse as children. Not one of them of their abusers was on any registry. So that was a sample she threw. If anybody else has ideas or thoughts, that might be a good way to do that. I think I can see you if you're in the queue, so just feel free to press star 6 and get in the queue, and I'll bring you on in there. Not seeing you yet. Do you have any questions for us, Stephen, or
No, I mean, if I had a question, it would be if anybody had seen examples of anything or anything particularly effective that they've liked when they've either written an op-ed themselves or read one by somebody else. But that's a great example, because I'm assuming the point there is that the vast majority of sexual abuse occurs outside, you know, by folks, 95% of it off, who are not on the registry. So, and that's a great way to get just right up front to get that.
I know one of the things that, here's a question. Okay, well, we'll bring that on in. So,
hi, it's John again. we've got a story that has not yet ended here. To give you just the short version, a very religiously conservative and politically conservative state representative, he and his wife hired or adopted three girls who turned out to have had a lot of issues, and so they indulged in what was called rehoming, where they gave over the three girls to some people that they trusted, and the father of the family wound up sexually molesting the six-year-old, the oldest of the two. And again, this is an example of this person not being on anyone's radar. And everybody was just so shocked about that that they're now trying to pass a law against this rehoming, but no attention is being given over to the fact that this person who did admit guilt and is already in prison was not on any list. So using this as a specific starting point, how to best write an op-ed, what would you recommend or what would you emphasize should go into an op-ed based on this story?
Yeah, that's a really good, it's a great example, John, of how you take a news story and build on it. An op-ed would work really well there. And, I think I'd start, I don't know if it was Cheryl who wrote that. I mean, my lead would be something like Cheryl's lead. It's that, I'd start with linking, my lead would say, the recent news story about the rehoming of the six children, one of whom was abused by the new father, illustrates why we're focused on the wrong people when we talk about sexual abuse.
Aha.
95%, my theme would be the majority of sexual abuse is perpetrated by those who are not on the sex offender registry, and we are wasting resources when we, by continuing to pour state money into in this direction. Then I'd listen.
Right.
Go with some evidence, and I think it just flows right out from there, and it's a great example because there's so many opportunities to use news stories. Because obviously, these are terrible stories, and they get a lot of attention, and there are a lot of them out there, and we can really reframe this issue by seizing back the initiative from the news media by using them to talk about what really works in protecting kids and the fact that we're focused on focusing many of our resources in the wrong direction.
Okay.
So, great. Yeah, I can keep going unless there's another person in line there.
I did have one other person in line. Just popped in there.
Yeah, Steve, I've got just a point, really, not so much a question, but it might be a point for all the callers. And if I could, probably in time, I could probably put something together for myself. But the definition of cruel and unusual punishment, that applies in the most incredible way with sex offenders. I mean, and I think if there was some way we could get a true or revised definition of what cruel and unusual punishment, we talk about it with, fighters in wars and what they can do, what we can do to them. But here at home, we're being tortured literally every day of our lives, mentally and some physically. And I would love to see someone that's good at these op-eds or, could take that point and somehow develop it to where you make someone look at it in that arena rather than just sex offender, period. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Great. Well, okay. I think that's the only thought I'd have about that. I don't have anything to add to what you said substantively, but just perhaps in terms of organizationally, maybe if there's a state group, if your state group, wants to assign folks to, this gets into your internal organization, and obviously you are the experts in that, but, you have some folks that are writers and others who aren't, some can research, and, if you kind of make this a regular part of your activities, to get out, say, letters and op-eds, which I'm sure you're already doing that, so I'm probably not going to be on it, but anyway.
Maybe not. Yeah. All I was going to add, Steve, was I was just thinking that I used to tutor writing a good bit when I was in college, being an ex-English major myself. And what I'm finding with this, it reminds me your layout of a different structure, which was that the really short version was tell them what you're going to tell them. Mm-hmm. Then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them, right. And then, and then the other one was a kind of an outlining form, which was you lay out at the beginning your two or three points, then you specify each of those in a little more detail, and then again you summarize those points again in the conclusion. So as a mm-hmm. you know, so you kind of go 1, 2, 3, and then you go 1. Details, 2, details, 3, details, and then you kind of go 1, 2, 3. And it's a formula, much like yours is, but the you know, it helps people organize their thoughts to think, okay, I've got to make, you know, keep it concise.
And that newspaper, that pyramid structure to news writing is the reason, I mean, the reason for that, I mean, as you know, is that newspaper readers are moving fast, so they got to get everything
right.
Up front. They may only read half the article, so the essential piece, which is, you know, your theme,
yeah.
And your most important piece is something. Actually, you bring up something really important, which is that I haven't even thought about putting in here, but it's that your strongest piece of evidence goes first in an op-ed, because it is so short and people are
yes.
only read half of it. So, yeah. In terms of
and actually I wasn't thinking about that pyramid either, but you're right. The anything you're doing that's going to end up in a newspaper kind of thing, you want to make sure that in that very first few sentences, they know what you're going after,
yeah.
and you've hooked them in, and then everything else is just kind of fluff. I mean, if they've stuck with you that long, and if the editor hasn't chopped it off, then, you know, you want to sum it up at the bottom, but sometimes they just chop it off. So, you know, you want to make sure you've got it right there at the top for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I'll... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great. Well, I'll move on here. I'm going to just talk about a few other tips about the writing process next. First, we're getting into kind of, miscellaneous tips. So first, keep it simple. You know, when you have a choice, use short sentences instead of long sentences. Use short words instead of long words. So simplicity is next to godliness when it comes to writing. A second point is use plain language. This is related to keep it simple, but avoid jargon if you can. You know, when you have to use it, define your terms. So, like, instead of saying rates of recidivism, you can say the likelihood, of committing another offense. I mean, we know what recidivism is. Most folks don't. You can introduce the term recidivism, but explain what it is when you first use it, at least. You know, residency restrictions is another piece of jargon. We don't, we use it, but other folks don't know what it is. So define that at first use. You know, bans on where registrants can live. Another one, civil commitment. I wrote down detaining an offender indefinitely after they've served their sentence, also known as civil commitment. So it defines civil commitment. So, all right. Third, about the writing process. You know, many of us get writer's block. I did say this a bit, but what do you write first? You know, as I said earlier, you know, you write your theme first, get that theme down, and then go from there. And don't try to make it perfect, because it's not going to be. Perfect. You know, your draft, once you get into, you've got your theme down, you're starting to write your draft, don't try to make that first draft perfect, because, you know, it never is. And typically, you're going to write that lead last, because that's actually the hardest piece to write. Maybe I said that. But so write down your theme, write down your key pieces of evidence that support that theme, start there. Now, that gives you a really good outline to get going. Theme, you know, your pieces of evidence, and then, you know, that'll really get you going. All right, so next, here's another piece of advice, move fast. You'll notice that most of the leads that we discussed earlier reference something that's current. So when it comes to our op-ed, I mean, obviously that means the time to write one is when there's something related to sex offender policy that's being discussed in you know, in the community or the state, as in John's example of the abuse. So you usually have a few days to get your op-ed out there. So write it fast and get it out. Next, another tip is edit your work. So if possible, put it aside for a day, reread it, find an editor, and that doesn't necessarily mean, by that I don't mean find a professional editor to read it. We don't always have one, but maybe you have a friend who's good with words who can read it for you. It's a little scary to get feedback from our friends, but it really will make it better to get a second pair of eyes on it. Even if it's you don't have a professional editor around, you have somebody who enjoys reading and can give you a little feedback. Another piece of advice is about length. Most newspapers have pretty clear guidelines. If you get on their website, they'll usually give you a word count for op-eds. If they don't, you can always write to the editorial page editor and ask whether they do have a word count. And, with Larry's question about, I didn't say this, but when you're writing to an editor, you're obviously looking for the editorial page, or the person, the editor who handles op-eds. And that may be the editorial page editor. It may be that it's somebody else on the editorial page staff, but try to get on, each of these websites has a masthead, lists all the staff, and so find out who the person is and ask them. If they don't provide a guideline on length, ask the person who's responsible. Okay, that's length. Another tip is about balanced tone, and this gets back a bit to that idea of an inoculation paragraph. There's a thing that trial lawyers talk about, and it is that to persuade somebody, you have to identify with the emotions behind their argument. So we have to find common ground with readers. And so, we have to see readers and have to see those even on the other side of this issue, not as enemies, but more like potential allies. So that means we have to start with where they're at, which is that folks are afraid for their children. Overly afraid, we might say, but they are afraid for their children. We need to help them see that there are better ways than what we're doing now, to keep different policies, different set of policies that can keep kids safe. So it's usually going to be a losing argument, I would say, to say that victims get too much attention. It's usually not going to work to say that the public is, just overreacting to, when it comes to the impact of sexual abuse on victims. We know that obviously victims react in different ways, but that's usually, people don't react well to that. It's just not where people are at. So we have to show that we care about the victims on both sides of this issue, both those of you who have been abused and registrants and their wives and children, and many of the registrants, obviously, as you all know, have lives that are being negatively affected or torn apart by our sex offender laws. So that's balanced tone. And then finally, another tip, if you are interested in more training about how to write op-eds, I've got a link up on the screen here to something called the Op-Ed Project. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. They do have a great reputation, though, in terms of helping activists learn how to write good op-eds, and they have half-day and full-day seminars around the country. So this link is also in the handout that either is or is not on the wall, but make sure it is. So it's up there. Okay, I'm going to move on without stopping here to how to pitch op-eds, because I know we're getting up into 9 o'clock and we don't have far to go yet. So how to pitch op-eds. So usually you're going to send your piece, your op-ed piece, by email. So what do you say in your email? So here are 5 questions. This is your cover email. You're sending your op-ed, you're attaching your op-ed, or actually it's better to actually just paste the op-ed right into your email, because many of these editors have software that filters out attachments or blocks your email. So if you have an attachment, so actually just paste it right in. So here's the first thing that should be in your cover email, is just what's the idea? What's the main idea? Give a synopsis of the op-ed in just a sentence. And you've already done that. You've written your theme, so that's easy. Just lift that straight out of your piece and just use that. Second is why now? what, you know, what's the news hook? Why is this worth reading at this moment? You've probably already answered that in your lead, so that's probably pretty straightforward too. Third is the kind of so what? Why should people care? And, you know, I think you all are pretty well situated to answer that. One good reason is that, you know, for those folks out in the public, for readers, the message is that this could be your son or daughter who next gets caught up by the registry, and so that should matter. That should answer, help answer so what, the so what question. We could all be in this situation. And then a fourth question your email should answer is why you? Why are you the best one to write this piece? And as we've talked about, you know, you all are well placed to talk about this issue because you experience it. So, and then finally, how do we reach you? So then there you just include your contact information. So I do have a sample of a cover email to send send to an editor. And it's up on the screen. I'm just going to read it here. Dear John Smith. John Smith is the editor in this case. Bans on where those on California's sex offender registry can live cause more problems than they solve and do nothing to protect children, as years of research have proven. So that's actually the theme of the op-ed, maybe. You just looked at that, and that's right in the first sentence. Modesto's proposed 2,000-foot residency restrictions will create chaos and disruption for the loved ones of residents in this city, since many have families of their own. I should know, my husband's on the registry, and if this restriction passes, our entire family, the two of us and our two children, may be forced to move. Below, I've pasted a 600-word op-ed for the editorial page. Thank you for considering this piece, and feel free to contact me with questions. Signed, Jane Doe, and then her address and email address. So that's an example of a cover email. So you send this off, and the editor responds. You get a response back. These folks are fairly responsive, and you probably will hear back. If they say no, which, as any writer knows, learning how to accept no and move on is one of the greatest skills. So you're going to get a lot of that. Remember that no can be the beginning of a conversation that can lead to yes. So if they say no, you know, you can ask them if it would be acceptable to convert your op-ed into a letter to the editor. If they say yes, on the other hand, you can obviously thank them. And, you know, don't thank them for showcasing you. Thank them for giving space to, you know, the ideas and issues that you're addressing. If the editor, then there's another possibility, obviously. The editor does not respond. So set a time limit. When you send that cover email off, have a time limit. Set a time limit. You know, if your idea has a really short shelf life, it's going to get old quickly, you might give an editor like a day or two to respond. If it's, you know, if it's an evergreen idea, something that is going to be lingering around, you can give it a week or two or more, and then send a follow-up email to the editor saying that, you know, you'd still like to run your piece, you know, really nice, be nice about it, say, you know, you'd still like to run your piece in their publication, that they are your first choice for this piece, but since the piece is timely, if you don't hear from them by the end of the day or the week or whatever, you're going to assume that they've passed on it and that you'll be submitting your op-ed elsewhere. Just be polite and nice. And, you know, the reason to do that, you know, your local papers, a lot of people think, well, okay, I'm going to submit my op-ed to several places at once. So the problem with that is that if they say you send it to three outlets, you know, an alternative paper, and you have two dailies, and send it to all three, if all three say yes, or two of them say yes, then you're in a bind, and now an editor is not going to be happy with you. One of the editors, whoever you don't decide gets it, that editor is not going to be happy. So you want to submit it to one publication at a time. All right, and then just briefly, where to pitch op-eds. You know, everybody wants to get into the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, and so forth, and that's really tough. Your best bet is in a state or a local paper, so think about where the issue that you're writing about is being discussed. If it's a new residency restriction at the state level, try the paper in the state capital first. That's the one that's going to be most likely to be read by legislators. If it's a local ordinance, obviously your local paper's best. And you're going to have more luck, obviously, with the local paper. Local papers are struggling, and they're trying to differentiate themselves with, by their local roots. So they do prefer local writers. They're looking for copies. So, and if you do want to pitch a bigger paper, I've included. So on screen, I have links to a couple of good lists of bigger, contact information at bigger newspapers. So. All right, I'm going to stop just briefly and ask if there are any questions, concerns, complaints before we go to talk quickly about letters to the editor.
Okay. I am still having occasional problems with your volume, Steve, especially when you sort of drop your voice drops down a little bit.
Okay.
I did have a question. Let me see if I can get back up to it from Stefan. He wanted to know if he was concerned about using supporting arguments where they might actually backfire. And you put in a supporting argument, and then it gets twisted around and used differently. There's been a little bit going on in the chat with that same idea from Cheryl. Where somebody pointed out that somebody might take that none of their abusers are on the sex offender registry and turn it around and say, well, couldn't they just turn right around and say, well, then obviously we need to get more people on the registry, so to anticipate that a little bit and kind of inoculate yourself against that kind of a thing. So he's wondering if you've had that happen and what you might be able to do to try to avoid that.
Yeah. I have not seen that happen in any of the op-eds I've written, but I can certainly see that point on that particular piece of that particular argument. And I do think what you just said, Brenda, is the solution there is to anticipate it, to inoculate it.
Mm-hmm. A suggestion I had, what I suggested in the chat was the idea that rather than simply say none of them are on the registry, try saying the registry did nothing and would do nothing to have prevented it.
Mm-hmm.
To point out that their registries are useless, in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody liked that idea, but we were listening to you mostly, so we haven't been chatting too much over there on the chat board. But
well, and the other way to go there might be to say some folks might argue that therefore we should expand the registry. There should be even more people on it than there are. But look at what the registry is already costing our state. It is impractical. To think about expanding a system that that hasn't been shown to prevent child sexual abuse, to spend more money on that. And
in other words, the registry is not preventing it, but it's
right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The,
well, we.
Yeah. Go ahead. So I think that's a good point.
Okay, I do have a couple of folks in line here now. So,
hi, John again. I caught most of the five steps you said about pitching an op-ed, but I want to make sure I've got them down all together and correctly. Would you repeat those when you can, please?
Okay, I'll just very quickly just run it. So, this is in the cover email we're talking about, I guess. First, what's the idea? Second, why now? Third, so what? Fourth, why you? And fifth, how do we reach you? So your contact information.
Thank you.
And then we have a question from Don.
Yeah, with regard to this discussion about people not being on the registry and counter arguments that just say put more people on the registry, The point is that these are people who you don't know are sex offenders. They're undisclosed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just add people you don't know about to the registry. And that's the whole argument against, is that for 94% or 93, 95, whatever survey you've seen, you know, for this huge percentage of offenses that occurs, we don't have a clue that these people were going to commit this offense.
Right.
That's the whole point of the thing. So there really isn't any good counter-argument that says, well, we need more people on the registry, because who do you put on it?
Yeah. We put all of us on it.
Is that right?
Great point, because they're the vast majority of first-time offenders. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions before we move on? Nope.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Go directly to letters to the editor. I'm going to do this briefly. You know, once you've done an op-ed, doing a good letter to the editor is kind of a breeze. The structure of a letter is identical to that of an op-ed, but it's shorter. So letters to the editor, as Larry mentioned, typically are no more than 300 words, so that's, you know, less than half the length of an op-ed in many cases. So we're going to talk about the lead first. So the lead, whether you say to the editor or dear editor, doesn't matter. That doesn't get printed, obviously. So remember that we said for op-eds, you can choose among, you know, the different types of leads: dramatic story, news hook, personal story, etc. So in your lead for a letter, you really only have one choice, and that's the news hook. You want to refer in your first line to whatever it is you're responding to, you know, whether that's an article in the paper, or if it's something that happened in the community, or if it's a letter to the editor by somebody else you're responding to their letter. You want to link right back to whatever news that your letter responds to. So here's an example of a lead. Here's the quote. Thank you for David Smith's August 9 story about the 2,000-foot residence restriction being proposed by Councilman Johnson. Unquote. So lead, first sentence of a good letter to the editor. All right, we're moving on to theme. One sentence for your theme. Again, this is the main point you're trying to make. You're boiling your piece down, you're boiling your idea down into one sentence, preferably with an action verb, and we talked about that. So here is an example of theme. And what's in bold here is actually the theme. So the urgency of opposing the proposed ordinance cannot be stressed enough. Quote, the urgency of opposing the proposed ordinance cannot be stressed enough. Multiple research studies, and this is the theme, multiple research studies have shown that bans on where those on Colorado's sex offender registry can live cause more problems than they solve and do nothing to protect children. Unquote. That's the one sentence that boils down the entire argument that's in this letter. All right. Supporting arguments for letters to the editor. With letters, you probably only have space for one or at most 2 points here. So first point, evidence. If you want a conclusion, sorry, I have that in the wrong font. So that conclusion. So evidence, point, evidence, conclusion. Second point, evidence, conclusion, if you want to put in a conclusion. And I'm going to give an example here. So here's an example of a supporting argument. So here it is. Quote, residency bans actually make children less safe. In 2009, our state's Sex Offender Management Board, an expert panel appointed by our state legislature to advise it on sex offender laws, issued a white paper. It concluded that residency restrictions like Councilman Doe's don't lower recidivism and actually could increase the risk to the public. That's because they drive those in the sex offender registry underground or toward homelessness, making it harder for them to get jobs. And I can't read. Oh, which multiple studies have shown help them avoid new offenses. Sorry, my screen was blocked here by my little sharing call pop-up there. But anyway, so that's an example of a supporting argument. And now we're going to talk about, so we have lead, theme, supporting arguments. You know, you don't have space for an inoculation paragraph, really, in a letter, unless, you know, maybe you can put one sentence in. That might work if you think that there's a very obvious argument you need to counter. But so conclusion, you know, again, is a little pithy ending, leaves readers with some thought. This captures what you've been trying to say in the piece. Ideally, it circles back to your lead, if that's possible. So here is an example of a conclusion. So, quote, I respect Councilman Johnson's desire to protect our children, but I urge him to withdraw this dangerous proposal, which will do nothing of the sort. I also appeal to residents of Englewood to contact your council members to ask them to oppose it. Unquote. Signed, Jane Doe, and her address. So that is conclusion. All right, and that's, we've kind of, I guess we're now, Brenda, if you all want to hit anybody with questions about this, about letters, or about the entire presentation, ideas, concerns.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Yes, we're welcome to take any more questions. If there's anything you want to have him review, any other thoughts or ideas, now's a good time. I will take a moment to just, again, apologize for the difficulties we had at the beginning, and I can promise you I'm going to be on the phone with the tech support people tomorrow, because that was just kind of nutty there at the beginning to have all that noise. And I appreciate everybody's patience and hanging in there and calling in. We still have a pretty good crowd. But any other questions for Steve, or any other thoughts? I will also add, while I'm waiting to see if anybody actually has any more questions, just a reminder that, you know, we do these every fourth Tuesday. There's something. We won't be doing one the month of June because of our conference, and I do want to encourage all of you to consider making plans to attend our national conference in June, which is the 25th, 26th, and 27th in Dallas. And that information is all up on our rsolconference.org. You can see who's coming to speak and sign up and plan to attend. Still no questions? Not even from John Sarna, who's asked one every single break we've had? Anyway. Okay. Any other thoughts from you, Steve?
No. This has been really great questions, and obviously a really skilled, thoughtful group of people.
Ah, okay. I poked John long enough. All right. Did I get you, John? Nope, I took him right back off again. John, oh, here you are. There you are. I don't know what I did. I clicked next, and you were gone. There you go, John.
Me. Well, hopefully I'm back again.
There you go.
One thing I've been kind of worried about, when you're pitching an op-ed, when you're writing it or a letter, there's always going to be the risk of maybe some people saying, okay, we're going too far. Steve, what advice or information? I think one of it is put it aside, let the letter cool for a day or so. But are there any other recommendations or suggestions on how to make sure that we have a balanced tone, that we're not going, say, too far into creating a polemic or something like that? What other advice or recommendations do you have?
I think I would try to give it to somebody who is completely unfamiliar with the issue, who you know. And I know that might be tough if, you know, with friends and family. I mean, but maybe you have a cousin or somebody who's not going to, you're not going to create a riff with by sharing this. But, you know, get feedback from somebody who's just not engaged in this issue at all, and see what they react, you know, how they react. I mean, that's like your little, it's like a little focus group for you, a mini focus group.
Mm-hmm. Would that include maybe a fellow RSOL member? Just let them take a look at it and get their feedback.
Well, I'd say that's good for if you have a fellow RSOL member. It'd be good for critiquing the language and the structure of it, and does it make sense?
Uh-huh.
Are you coming across your point? But in terms of being able to assess whether you're going too far and how this is going to appeal to your average reader, they're probably not as well situated because they're so enmeshed in this issue.
I was going to make that same comment, Steve, that somebody, even if they're not totally outside the issue, definitely somebody who's not immersed in it. Oftentimes a fellow RSOL member, you're preaching to the choir, and they know just what you're talking about, and they're going to say, go sister or go brother, and they might miss something that another wouldn't. I often, if I write and have the time, I'll hand it to my husband, who is certainly sympathetic to the issue, but spends most of his days with other people who, range from I don't care to I don't know. So he's able to look at it with a much more neutral glance, and say, I don't know if you ought to say it quite like that, Brenda, because, they might, the victim advocates might look at that and take it as, and give me that kind of a feedback. And since he loves me, I don't have to worry about being, chased out of the house that way. So, yeah, finding a friend who's just not as immersed in it is a really good idea. I recommend that as well. Any other thoughts or questions? I guess we are done then. I don't dare take everybody off of mute because there's so many of you. We heard what happened at the beginning when I did. But I do want to... Oh, Don's back. There we go. See, I'm trying to hang up on you and somebody jumped in. Okay, did I get you, Don? I think I'm cutting people off instead of bringing them on, and I'm not sure why. Okay, I've got you back manually. So, Don? I think he's on mute still, even though I've taken him off mute.
Oh,
I think his, there you
did
are.
Did I fix it? Yep.
Sorry. Yeah, there you go.
That was my fault.
Yeah.
You have some questions out in the chat that you might review real quickly.
New ones? Okay. I have to man the board. There we are. Yes, thank you for bringing that up, Don. Let's see here. Yeah, okay. Thank you. We're talking about newspapers, which are also online. Can we apply all your tips also for blogs? They might have a different timing or audience or purpose, perhaps.
Yeah.
That's one question.
Do you want me to respond to that, or do you want to have others here?
Yeah, that was a question. So, yeah,
okay.
Steve, if you...
Blogs are a different animal, I would say. I don't know... it's an interesting idea. Maybe that's a good session. But to offer to guest blog for sympathetic bloggers is not a bad idea. And I think that you could reasonably assume you could approach that, approach a blogger in the same way that you'd approach an editor in terms of how you pitch, write a cover email to them. Obviously with a blog, length is going to be a little different. I mean, you could write an email just inquiring first whether they're interested in guest bloggers. Here's the topic you're interested in. They write about XYZ issue, but this is related to what they care about, and maybe they'd be interested. So, yeah, I mean, I think you could certainly do that.
I was going to say, if anybody wants to follow Steve's recommendations on how to write one of these things. We have a blog, obviously, that we use here on RSOL, and we'd love to have a few guests. Sandy has a blog that with Justice for All that also gets posted. And sometimes we put those on the RSOL site, sometimes we don't. So those are a couple of places that you definitely could submit a blog post to. So our site and to With Justice for All, because we might take a guest. So let's see. So definitely give that a try. I agree. Let's see here. Do you need to pitch a letter to the editor the same way you would pitch the op-ed?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. No, no, you just send the letter. You don't
okay.
need a cover. You don't need a cover for a letter. You just send the letter right to the person, and you know they'll say at the bottom of the editorial page how you send the letter to the editor in. So just send it right into that person. The letter itself.
Okay. Very good. And then a question from Joanna was, I think that the words are important, and how we frame our argument to the general public, especially with regard to sex offender laws, since the laws are a result of overreaction to specific events or irrational thinking without much regard for facts. The words themselves need to be persuasive. And also she mentions also there's other good venues besides newspapers, which we just mentioned blogs as a possibility. I guess so. It's more of a comment, but just how we frame the argument and the word choice that we use. I think you mentioned, Steve, the idea of, you know, keeping your words short, keeping the sentences short. I often say, you know, imagine you're talking to an adult, but try to use, you know, fourth to eighth grade language to keep it really simple. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually Microsoft Word and maybe some other programs have a great way to check the level of your language. Like after you've written a piece, you can run it through the I can't remember quite offhand where in the navigation that is, but Word, Microsoft Word has a way to check your reading level. It's a good thing to do.
I have to go look that up sometime. Yeah.
So, I mean, we always talk about, I think fourth and fifth is great, at most seventh grade level, you know, and that'll help you keep your words and sentences short. And, you know, and just one very quick thought in terms of how we frame things, you know. I mean, when I heard that question, the immediate example that came to mind was using the term registrant or person on the registry rather than sex offender, because sex offender, and you all know this, I mean, when we use the word sex offender, people get the image of somebody who's continuing to offend. And we're talking about people who are on the registry, maybe something happened 20 years ago, and that's very different. So,
yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I know the word of choice these days here at our organization, we try to use registered citizen or registrant, certainly, after you've established what you're registering for, you know. Sometimes you do say persons convicted of a sexual offense. I mean, sometimes you do have to put it that way, just based on what you're talking about. But, yeah, we try to avoid calling someone a sex offender or a sexual offender in whatever context we can for that very reason, because it does immediately conjure up an image of somebody who's actively doing it, or we'll do it again, and all those other problems that we're constantly fighting. Okay, we did have another question come in, so let me see.
Just chiming in on this conversation that's going on, because I'm really sensitive to that issue.
Yeah.
We have created this situation in our culture where we're allowing the registry to define someone's character.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't do that, and we can't let it do that. And in along with the excellent terms that have been suggested here, I frequently just use the word former offenders.
Yes, that's another good one.
Try to illustrate that this is something somebody did in the past, doesn't mean they're going to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is a good one, Don. I agree. So thanks for sharing that as another option. Okay, I think I did finally catch up on, let's see, Barbara has added the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, pardon the stupid, but the idea is good. So always good, yeah. And I think, okay, somebody was asking about legislators. Let's see, I'd be interested in advocating to legislators for changing in the law with regard to sex offenders and other terms. We in the church use returning citizens, yes, and I have seen that a lot in reentry circles, returning citizens, rather than ex-offenders, because we can change the attitude by changing the language. Heartily agree with that. And she agrees that the registry defines the person and tags them, and so we need to work to try to change that. I do, returning citizens, I think that's where the registered citizens comes from, kind of a spin-off of that. Yeah, we're talking about the registry, problems with the registry. So to say a registered citizen reminds the person you're talking to that this is a citizen of the United States, and just like you are. So mm-hmm. much more powerful. Any further thoughts on that, Steve? I'm kind of jumping in here.
I'm writing those down to use myself. Perfect.
Yeah.
Those are not terms I've...
Yeah, and one person did say, "How might do you see any advantage to compare this to the state legislators? You know, an op-ed is different, obviously, than writing to a legislator. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?"
Hmm. Yes, that's certainly not my area of expertise.
My thinking on it is that the basic concept, you know, Steve's idea that you start with that key point and then you elaborate and you have the you know, each of those succeeding points with supporting information definitely would apply. The shortness factor would apply. My own experience, you know, if you have a particular bill you're trying to address, you know, for instance, it's a residency restrictions bill, since that's a lot of the examples, you know, it might run on a little longer because there may be several other points, specific points that need to be made. But if you're simply writing to a legislator to point out generally, you know, problems with some existing laws, that kind of thing. You'd want to follow that same basic idea that the KISS principle, and especially if it's during legislative session, they don't have time to read, you know, a five-page diatribe about everything that's ever gone wrong with the legal system. You know, it really does help to have that one particular focus, the theme, the, you know, the supporting points, and then a quick conclusion, and it would all fit on a page. I mean, you know, really, that 500 words is probably a good ballpark to shoot for. If you can't put it in 500 words, you're probably saying too much. That would be my, you know, quick analysis. So similar, but you know, you'd be aimed at, and you would probably want to aim at legislation with a legislator. They're going to want to know what do you want me to do? So you'd want to, you know, one of the main things you'd want to do there is say, you know, bill such and so is a bad idea because it's not going to be effective, it's going to waste money, blah, 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 and then you provide your supporting documentation for it. So let's see, I think there was somebody that got in the queue, and I see one more question here. Yeah, you think about the audience. Addressing legislators is different than addressing a newspaper, and that would be different from an academic person. So, okay, so we have one more question here. So I'll see if I can click next if it works this time. Did I get you? Nope. Please press *6 again because I didn't catch your name as well, and I'm not sure how to get you back like I did the others. I will say Sandy, there she is. Okay, so Joanne Leaderson.
This is Joanne.
You are there. Great. Okay.
Yes. I'll be short just because I know we're running over time. But
okay.
Somebody told me that writing for to the legislators, what we have to bring up is money and budget, because for them, often it's all about money. What do you think about that as a major argument?
I would definitely agree with that in principle. You want to point out the Constitution as well, where the Constitution fits the bill, or doesn't fit the bill, as the case might be. But definitely, where there's a budgetary connection, you want to point out the waste of tax dollars, and so that is often a very important element.
I find that it's always the sex offender laws and the registry always has a budget implication in terms of homelessness and lack of jobs,
yeah,
and things like that.
And those often don't show up. Mm-hmm. Those often do not show up in your, I mean, there's usually a budget analysis that goes with any bill, but those kind of things don't get listed.
Do you think that's okay to kind of stress that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially where you can back it up. As Steve was pointing out, you have the, you make the point that it's, if you just go in there and say it's going to cost more money than you think, then they're going to say, how? So, you do need to be able to try to back that up as well as you can. So, for instance, to say it's going to cost more money because we're going to have more people homeless on the streets that are going to end up on public assistance, for instance. And they're on public assistance because they haven't been able to get jobs because they're and if only you let them, so you got to be able to back that up. That's the critical part. Yeah.
That's helpful. Thanks.
Sure. Okay. So we are definitely over time. We probably should wrap that on up now. And I want to thank again Steve for coming on board. One last thing. We do have one other place where we can post, which is Tales from the Registry. That's another website that is adjacent to our own. You can get to it by going to the RSOL website. I think it's on the right-hand column. But that's another place where you can kind of cut your teeth with a story, and pretty much anything that you write there. There's not a real stringent review, so it's a good place if you have a story that you want to tell or a point you want to get across. Tales from the Registry is a good place to begin, and if it's especially good, we might pick it up and put it right on our front page or elsewhere. So just wanted to toss that in. So anyway, thanks again, everyone, and for your patience. And we'll have a recording of this posted soon to share with those who were having trouble hearing. Maybe they can turn the volume up better on the recording. We'll see how that goes. And I promise to get the kinks worked out of this thing by next time, so we don't have the rocky start that we did. Steve, again, thanks for coming. And we will sign off at this point and give you a silent round of applause since everybody's on mute. So yay! I'm not on mute. All right, thanks a lot, and good night to all. Bye-bye now.